With a start, Sterling awoke to pain, throbbing agony that seemed to fill his entire body. He had been shot several times, then fallen unconscious. So why was he still sucking air? Sterling wondered, feeling the insect-like trickle of sweat, or perhaps blood, flowing down his face. There had come the sound of a rapid fire. No, several rapid fires. And then his Sekhmen fell dying on every side. Carstairs had been the first. He tumbled from his horse and hit the grassland so hard his boots came off. Trying to track the attackers, Sterling had worked the bolt and trigger on the big Browning long blaster like a madman. The muzzle flashes had lit up the night. And then he'd seen them. Tiny flowers of flame shimmering in the distance. Burning flowers from the muzzles of their unseen enemies. Chang fell, shooting into the darkness. Then Taylor's blaster had jammed, and he dove through the flying lead to reclaim the sawed-off scattergun. He'd lit up the night with the twin discharge, and the three Outlanders were running. Rushing to a horse, Taylor had grabbed a bag of Molotovs and advanced to finish the job when a bright white light banished the night. Caught in the deadly glare, Taylor tried to get a Molotov ready in time, but the Outlanders had ripped the man apart in a shitstorm of lead. As the light faded, Sterling had stumbled through the weeds to grab the second BAR from Chang's bloody hand. Checking the load, he found it was empty, and dug in his pockets for any spare brass. As soon as Sterling could dimly see figures in the starry blackness, he'd opened fire with the Browning, then dropped it and did the same with the other. The range was long, damn near impossible, but Sterling had known there was no other way. That first volley had hit his people from 600 yards away, maybe seven. What kind of a long blaster could hit a person that far away? Only the BAR could respond. Nothing else had the range. A cold breeze blew over the Sec Chief as Sterling remembered that Ryan had a long blaster that could ace that far, and so did his companions. Vehemently, the Sec Chief shook his head in refusal to accept the idea, only stopping when the agony in his chest grew to the point where he had trouble breathing.
Impossible!
Dried blood cracked off his lips. No way Ryan would jack Sekhmen from Tucsonville. But then, had Ryan known it was them? Maybe the companions thought some Outlanders were doing a night creep. Could Ryan have done this to them?
What?
Suddenly jerking awake, Sterling realized that he had fallen asleep again, and somebody was walking toward him. Feebly, his hand moved for the hand blaster at his side, but his fingers were too weak to pull the heavy revolver from the holster. By the blood of his fathers, was this how he was going to die? Lying in the weeds, unable to draw his own weapon like some green Sec man on his first day wearing shoes?
And whom do we have here?
The words were plainly spoken, but for some reason they sent a shudder through Sterling, and he rallied once more to reach his blaster. But the weight was impossible, and he might as well have tried to lift a mountain. In defeat, the Sec Chief lay on the ground, and concentrated on breathing as the stranger came closer.
I asked you a question. But I suppose simple courtesy is quite impossible, with a dozen machine gun bullets in your flesh. Actually, I am rather impressed that you are still alive.
A pair of weird shoes came into sight. The damn things were made of cloth, like a moccasin, only the material was silvery bright, like the hair on Doc Tanner. The resemblance was striking. The shoes were the exact same color, almost as if they had been spun from the hair of the Wrinkly, or other Wrinklies like him.
Still alive, after so much blood loss. Honestly, I could almost think that humanity was evolving into a tougher species, if I didn't know that was genetically impossible. Oh, a mutation might crop up. They always seem to, and at the oddest times. But there could never be an overall improvement. Oh no, that would be statistically absurd.
One of the slippers swung forward to nudge Sterling.
Oh, please forgive my rudeness, but we have not been properly introduced. I can see on your shirt that your name is Sterling, and from the abundance of your weaponry, I would say a Sec man, perhaps a Sec chief? Yes, of course. Sec Chief Sterling. I am Delphi.
Who gave a fuck what his name was? Squinting hard, the Sec Chief discovered that he could dimly see the field and the black lumps of his fallen comrades dotting the ground. The horses were gone. Run away. No. The Coldhearts who had attacked his people had taken their horses, leaving behind the blasters and black powder, as if the weapons were useless. I guess they were when you had rapid fires. They weren't checked for their blasters, Sterling understood in cold clarity, but for their horses. Everything else they threw away. Desperately, the man squinted into the darkness, and there it was, only a few yards away, the medkit, the canvas bag medkit. Strolling among the corpses lying in the field, Delphi stopped and turned.
Did you say something?
Blasters! All you want!
Quite bemused, Delphi crouched, bringing his face into view. It was a calm face, with dead black eyes like an insect or a pre-dark doll. His blonde hair was slicked back tight to his head, and there wasn't a single scar on his features. Not one. Sterling had never seen anybody like that before in his life. Even barons and gaudy sluts got into fights. The jaw and cheeks were smooth and unmarked, as if the man didn't even shave yet, or never had. The hands were slim, like a young girl's, and the clothing was all white, a crisp, clean white of new-fallen snow. Silver shoes and white clothing.
Blasters, you said. Well, I can see that you still have your formidable-looking sidearm, so I can only assume that this is a plea for clemency, perhaps?
My baron! Reward!
Sterling was exhausted, and through his blurry eyes he could see that the stranger was still crouching there, smiling just a little bit, as if entertained by his pain.
Oh, I see. You were offering me a bribe to assist you. Bad choice, I'm afraid.
The man stood and started to stroll away. Sterling couldn't believe what he was seeing. Who turned down a reward of blasters? But then, there were a half dozen lying in the weeds, and the pale man was walking around them as if trying to avoid piles of fresh night soil.
Now, if you had asked for help under the auspices of a moral imperative, that I might have listened to. After all, it was my employees who shot you and your associates, so I do feel some amount of responsibility. But your attempt to purchase my efforts as if I were a mercenary is insulting. I am an artist, a creator. Those paper-pushing bureaucrats at Overproject Whisper tried to buy me, and they soon learned the error of their ways. Oh yes, they did.
By now the man was gone from sight.
A reward, he said. Bah! Please die quickly, Sec Chief Sterling, and lighten this world from the dead weight of one more incompetent fool.
Listening to the wind rustle the blades of grass, Sterling could only hear his own rasping breath and thudding heart. As the itching on his skin grew worse, the Sec Chief felt his muscles tighten, and stiff fingers raked the soil as anger filled his body. Forcing himself into a lurch, Sterling painfully rolled over, then shoved a knee forward and pushed his boot backward to start stubbornly crawling toward the medkit. Every move was fire in his wounds, and the dirt rasped against his face, pebbles and sticks jabbing his skin until fresh blood flowed. But he gritted his teeth and kept going. Sterling saw some sort of small animal sniffing at Chang nearby.
Get away, you fucker!
The thing scampered away, but not very far. It sat to closely study the bleeding man, and Sterling knew if he passed out again, he would never wake up. He had to keep moving. He couldn't stop, not for a tick. Something tapped his head, and Sterling started to snarl to scare away the scavenger, but he only saw the canvas bag. He'd done it. Resting for a few laboring minutes, he rolled over sideways and went into convulsions, hot agony tightening his chest until he rolled over onto his back once more. He must have a busted rib. Well, nothing he could do about that for the moment. Fighting for air, Sterling forced his numb hands to fumble open the canvas bag and start pulling out everything, bandages, candles, and then a bottle of sterilized water. Twisting off the cap, Sterling poured some over his sticky face, then into his mouth. It tasted like blood, but eased the soreness inside his throat and sent a delicious chill into his stomach. There was food in the medkit, too. Not much, but some, along with plenty of bandages, plus the needles and things needed for stitching closed big wounds. He'd been hit in the back a few times. Not much he could do about those, aside from washing them with shine and covering them with bandages. No person could sew up his own ass, as the saying went. Maybe with the dawn he could pull the lead out of his legs, but that was for later. First things first, stop the bleeding, wash the dirt out of the wounds, eat, drink, and find some safe place warm to rest. Warm, that was important. Damn, the ground was cold. But afterward, Sterling would track down that bastard in white and shove those fancy silver slippers so far down his fucking throat he'd choke to death. Finding a roll of clean cloth, Sterling started to stuff the material into his wounds. The bastard was going to pay dearly for this. Even if it took Sterling the rest of his life, he would find the motherless son of a bitch and make him pay in long, bloody screams. Sterling used that hate as fuel for his exhausted muscles.
Run far and fast, muty fucker, 'cause I'm coming.
Stirring the fire with a green stick, Doc watched the red-hot embers rise on the warm currents and float away. Drifting on the currents, the dying spark sailed over the large boulder and out of the cave to ascend into the desert night until they seemed to become twinkling stars.
Starlight, star bright.
Doc tossed the green stick into the fire, causing an eruption of sparks. Perched uncomfortably on a rock, Doc could hear that the horses were sleeping outside, so he knew there was nobody near the cave. Their hearing was much more acute than a human's, so there was no sense sitting out in the cold when the horses could stand guard for him, and do a better job of it, too. A few yards away in the cave, the rest of the companions lay huddled together, sharing their body warmth, horse blankets on the ground, and jackets bundled as crude pillows. There was a horse blanket set aside for Doc to use, but he had decided against that. If he got too comfortable, it could lead to sleep, and that was an express train to death with so many enemies after them these days. No, they were all after him, Doc corrected himself, frowning deeply as he took another sip of cold coffee in the plastic cup. Over Project Whisper, Operation Kronos, Department Coldfire. The names may change, but the goal was always the same. Him. He was the key to time travel. They didn't know why, and the good Lord knew that he certainly didn't have the answer, or else Doc would be back home with Emily. Doc sneaked a glance at Lily. The young woman was sleeping peacefully under some spare blankets, her pale face turned his way. Feeling an ache of longing in his throat, Doc studied her delicate features, then vehemently shook his head and clawed for his wallet. Yanking it free, Doc withdrew the $50 bill hidden inside the fold. He had found the antiquarian greenback in Zero City when he was going through a rare coin store for kindling to start a fire. But when he'd seen it in the display case, he'd known at once he had to possess the 50. Paper money was without any value nowadays, except as a lavatory aid, but it had amused the old man to take the bill. The greenback came from his time, so it was a sort of souvenir from home. Besides, $50 was a year's income to a teacher. Having that much cash in his wallet made Doc feel rich. It was silly, he knew, but true nonetheless. Then he turned the bill over. There were words written on it in bright blue ink, faded over time, but still discernible if the light was just right. Words written in a handwriting that he knew by heart. His throat seemed to close as Doc focused on the words, the impossible words, written on the ancient piece of script.
Theo, you will find a way back. I'm waiting. Emily.
What happened next, the scholar really didn't remember. But Mildred had found him curled into a ball under a desk and weeping uncontrollably. His wife was dust in the grave, but still very much alive in the past. She was dead and alive at the same time. It was all a matter of time, and of timing. As if sensing Doc's troubled thoughts, Christy shifted in her sleep. There was a tin pot from a U.S. Army mess kit sitting near the small fire. Doc tossed aside the cold coffee. Pouring some of the warm water into a plastic cup, Doc added a packet of instant coffee from an MRE pack, then stirred in powdered milk and sugar. Sipping the tepid brew, Doc watched over his sleeping friends, knowing that this would be the last time he ever saw them. Time again, Doc thought sadly, savoring the dark flavor of the coffee. Just then, something moved in the darkness outside the firelight. Spinning in a crouch, Doc pulled both of his blasters and thumbed back the hammers in unison. A fat, rodent-like creature scampered into view, then darted back into the shadows again, moving, Doc thought, as if it knew what a blaster meant.
Perhaps it does.
Doc eased down the hammers on the Lama and Ruger before sliding the blasters back into their holsters.
After all, two heads are better than one.
Or did the creature have three? Doc wasn't really sure, and cared even less. There were so many aberrations in the world. What did a two-headed rabbit matter? Hey. Moving fast, Doc brought up the Ruger, then lowered it as Ryan walked around the crackling campfire, buckling on his gun belt. Doc holstered the gun.
You could not sleep?
No, I've come to spell you. You need to get some rest. Coffee isn't sleep, old man. And tomorrow we go after those cold hearts and get this matter settled. Permanently.
Impulsively, Doc started to quote the old saying that violence never settled anything, but then he stopped himself. Violence settled more matters than anything else he had ever seen. It was the Warhammer, not a gavel, that brought justice to the world.